The Oak Ridge Symphony and Chorus are presenting an all-Mozart concert this Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. The concert will be given at First United Methodist Church, Oak Ridge, and features violinist Gabriel Lefkowitz as soloist. And here to talk with me today about this program is music director and conductor Dan Alcott. Great to see you again, Dan.
I'm glad to be back, and I congratulate you on a successful fun drive.
Well, thank you. Thanks for your help on that. Well, to begin with, why an all Mozart concert? What inspired you to do this program?
I really don't like all one composer concerts, so that's a big risk.
Yeah.
I don't think it works some of the time, but with Mozart, I think it does. And in this case, it's fun to celebrate Mozart, who's a favored composer, because he wrote such a great variety of music. And so we've picked three very different pieces to do that. And our chorus loves to sing Mozart, and it's actually good for our orchestra. You have a lot of constituents when you're programming, and you have your audience, of course, but you also have your musicians, and they are a constituent. And this is a concert that's really fun for us to work on our skill level and play beautifully in an abstract way.
Let's talk first about the Coronation Mass. How did this piece earn its nickname?
It actually came about after it was written. This is one of Mozart's last Salzburg pieces, and he didn't name it the Coronation Mass. As is often the case, The names come later, and usually somebody who's trying to sell the music does that. And it is believed that this was called the Coronation Mass because Salieri actually used it in 1791 for the coronation of Leopold II. So he actually conducted a performance of it, and it came about that then it was started being called the Coronation Mass. So Mozart actually wrote this at a time, it seems trite to say, but this was a tough time in Mozart's life, and he wrote this kind of sunny, beautiful C major piece. It was after he returned from his trip to Paris. He'd been out basically looking for work, looking for a great position somewhere, and he'd had an unlucky trip to Paris, during which his mother passed away, and he returned to Salzburg, his hometown, and things were actually difficult with the Bishop Colloredo, who was his dad's boss there and Mozart's boss. And that was not just that Bishop Colloredo was difficult, although he did not like the fact that Mozart kind of chafed at the bonds of servitude. And at that time, Mozart's position was one of servitude to this slightly political and church appointee.
So would this work have been performed during a church service?
Yes, these masses were written as a church service, and many of them were written as what we call occasional music. Some of them were written to be used over and over for a certain season, and so they were performed as a part of the service, and there were restrictions all through time that composers were adhering to and stretching the bonds of those restrictions, and they would get too fancy. Maybe sometimes a papal edict or a letter would come out and say, you can no longer do this, and we have to be able to hear the words. So that had been going on for hundreds of years, actually. And composers had been obfuscating those rules and trying to get away with this and writing longer fugues and bigger pieces. This is an interesting time. All three of these pieces actually come from late, middle, and late Salzburg time.
I read that there are no violas in this work. Is that true?
What is up with that?
So what do you do about that?
They get to be on break. They get to go practice their divertimento and their concerto parts. I mean, I know so many viola players who play violin, depending on what you ask them to. In fact, I know some of them, it's funny, when you joke with them when they show up for a string quartet gig, you're like, did you bring both instruments? And, because they wonder what they're playing. So I think that was just part of small town life, that he was writing this piece and whoever the people were going to show up, and he had the right instruments and
didn't have any violas.
Yeah, it's I think that's part of it. Yeah.
Are there any vocal soloists?
There are four soloists, which is not unusual for a formal mass, and they are Amanda Pendley, who's a soprano, actually from our choir, from the Oak Ridge Chorus, and then my colleague Diane Pulte is singing the alto part from Tennessee Tech. And then two student performers that I've kind of cultivated and used in some performances from Tennessee Tech, Kevin Salter and Josh Voiles, rounding out that quartet.
Next, let's talk about the divertimento in F for strings. First of all, what is a divertimento?
Nobody's really sure what a divertimento is. But it does come from a time when Mozart was kind of developing his ideas for string quartets. This predates a set of six string quartets almost immediately. And he wrote three divertimentos. They're a smaller form. They're three movements. There's no dance. A typical quartet or symphony has a dance movement, like a minuet, and these do not have that. They might have been written just for occasional music, for what we would think of as background music. Mozart's naming of these things was quite inconsistent. It's just this collection of three wonderful works. It's not one of his most popular symphonies. It's not one of the last three symphonies. It's a piece the audience and musicians will enjoy equally.
This is actually an early work of Mozart. I believe he was 16 years old when he composed it. How does his style differ from his later works?
It's hard to judge Mozart just based on his age. You know, we were talking about his masses earlier, and his first full-blown mass was written in 1768, so he would have been 12. So when you say the young Mozart, well, he'd been writing professionally for four or five years by the time he wrote this. But I think, you know, you really see his mastery of this big form. It's a grand piece. And the mass, the great thing about it is it foreshadows some of his great and raucous operatic writing. I particularly love the fact that every time that the choir sings the word pace, peace, they yell it, forte. I mean, so you definitely hear Mozart's character. It's easy to think about the young Mozart. We have this jocular image of him that, unfortunately, from the movie Amadeus, and he was really a complex individual, and he was his own unique person, and he functioned in his own world, I think. You know, he's not a person that I identify with. He's a person that I admire.
Last but not least, Mozart's Violin Concerto No. 5 in A major, the so-called Turkish concerto. And so how did this piece earn its nickname?
Well, in the last movement, there's actually a Turkish march, which is very much like one from a ballet that he wrote. But this is not unusual for Mozart or any composer at this time. There was a fascination because up until about 100 years before this, Vienna had been under siege by the Ottoman Empire. And like anything we fear, we usually also have a little fascination with it. Mm-hmm. And so it was really all the rage for people in fashion to wear elements of what they called Turkish clothing. And in music, it certainly was pervasive. Mozart, in many cases, Beethoven, in many cases, Mozart wrote an opera, The Abduction from the Seraglio. And A major is a very, for some reason, is a key that he's consistently using Turkish elements in it. And in this case, it's fun because in the middle of this beautiful minuet, it's the kind of classic interruption. So you have this minuet style going on in the last moment, and all of a sudden there's a nice pause and a breath, and then boom, this loud Turkish march. So it's like Vienna is being confronted right away by this Turkish march. And it's supposed to scare you. That's what the Janissary Band was for, that you were supposed to hear them coming over the hill and you were frightened. And so it's kind of a fun interjection in this piece. And it ends absolutely in a sublime way, almost before you're ready for it to end. It's not the perfect way to end a concert unless you really love music, and then we all can just sit there and smile and think, wow, how sublime is this?
Would Mozart have performed this work?
We're actually not really sure. He wrote five violin concertos from around this time, and there's just not a lot of information about that. We know that Mozart was an excellent violinist. We also know he was a great pianist, but he didn't perform all his piano concertos either. A lot of times they were written for students. But it is from a time when he was performing, you know, in Mozart's time, even through Beethoven's time. If you were a composer, you usually performed your pieces, or it was vice versa. If you were a performer, you wrote your own pieces.
And so Gabriel Lefkowitz will be the soloist in this concerto. And how did this come about?
I'm super excited to have Gabe as our soloist. As you know, he's concertmaster of Knoxville Symphony and also now of Louisville Orchestra, where he will be leaving for Louisville. And he and I started having this conversation mostly because we know so many musicians in common. And so when I started planning this concert, I knew this was kind of a piece that I wanted to do. And I asked Gabe if he would be interested in doing it, thinking it was going to be very convenient for him.
Mm-hmm.
It has become less convenient because that was before he had, was awarded the job in Louisville. So we're really excited to have him. I think people will really enjoy hearing his wonderful playing as they do, but also in that very intimate space.
Well, Dan, I believe that's all I have for you today. Thanks so much for stopping by to chat with me.
I'm always happy to be back here.
Dan Olcott, music director and conductor of the Oak Ridge Symphony Orchestra, talking to me about their concert coming up this Saturday night. The program will be given at First United Methodist Church in Oak Ridge and begins at 7:30 p.m. More information is available online at orcma.org or by phone at 865-483-5569.